Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
What I wanted to talk about was the segregated witness, which we never really talked about what it was, because honestly, I'd never really understood exactly what it was. I mean, I knew it was some sort of technology that some people thought was going to solve the scaling issues that Bitcoin was having. And I'm not an engineer, so I mean, I was waiting to find a good explanation that laid it out there, made it clear as it possibly could be for a technical discussion of what this thing is and why is it supposed to be the solution. So I have an article from Bitcoinist.com, which is entitled SegWit Activated, How It Works and What's Next for Bitcoin. So let me get into that, because this is what's happening now. SegWit just went into place, I think like a week ago, basically, mm-hmm. or a week, maybe a week and a half at this point, week at least. And, you know, the fees are still crazy. Right now, the median fee is almost $5, meaning that the typical Bitcoin transaction, half of the transactions would be higher, half would be lower. So your typical Bitcoin transaction, if we call that the median, is costing about $4.75 today to send. So you want to send $1 worth of Bitcoin, it's going to cost you five times as much in a fee. If you want to spend, you know, if you want to send $500,000 or $50,000 or $5,000,
then big whoop,
then
right?
No big deal. But it is a big deal for anybody like me who thinks that Bitcoin should be used for day-to-day purchases. It's basically impossible at this point to use it for anything less than $100. In December of 2015, the source code for Segregated Witness was released. It was meant as a fix for the ever-problematic transaction malleability bug, which allowed for someone to change one or two characters of a transaction ID before it was cemented into the blockchain.
Like to point out that there was a transaction malleability attack on Bitcoin Cash, that didn't have the SegWit fix to it, and nothing happened.
Well, didn't they also fix the transaction malleability
bug? Must have, because the attack was in place.
I read that they'd fixed that.
Guess they did.
So anyway.
So, you know, we got to have SegWit to fix this. Yeah, apparently, you didn't.
No. So anyway, that's not what I wanted to get into. But the blockchain, by the way, for those that don't know, is the technology behind Bitcoin. That is the distributed public ledger that exists that shows every transaction that's ever happened on Bitcoin since it was founded in 2009. And so along with that, the segregated witness provides a method of scaling Bitcoin. Doing away with the concept of a block size, a new metric was made called block weight. Have you heard about this, Mark?
No.
It was the first I'd heard about it, too. There's been a lot of discussion and argumentation going on online for years now, 2 or 3 years, over what is supposed to happen to help scale Bitcoin. And segregated witness was something that people came to an agreement on earlier this year in May at the New York agreement, the SegWit 2X agreement, as it was called. And so they've implemented the SegWit part of the SegWit 2X. The 2X part, we'll explain that later. That's coming up in November. But the SegWit part, as of about a week ago, is in place. So what does it mean? Well, according to the story here at Bitcoinist.com, there's been a ton of misinformation about SegWit, so this will hopefully clear up some things about how it actually works. So as stated earlier, the whole idea of a block size has been gotten rid of, and now the network will use what's called block weight. So there are two types of data that are contained in a Bitcoin transaction. First, there's the actual transaction data, such as the address that the coins are going to. Then there's the so-called witness data, which is all the information that is only needed when the transaction is confirmed and when that data is essentially and then that data is essentially never used again. So segregated witness provides a discount to the witness data, and once committed to the blockchain, it gets pruned. So
okay.
So that means
that's good.
Right. That means that the
block size isn't so this, you know, big monstrous thing that it has been growing to be. Isn't every transaction basically the same size when it comes to Bitcoin?
No, they're different sizes, because when your Bitcoin wallet has different what's called unspent outputs,
okay,
I believe. The unspent outputs can be there can be multiple unspent outputs. So let's say you've got a Bitcoin wallet and you've received let's just say you've received a whole Bitcoin into that Bitcoin wallet,
okay,
but you've received it in a few different addresses. So, you know, you gave Johnson one address, you gave me one address, Johnson sent you half a Bitcoin, I sent half a Bitcoin.
Okay.
Now you want to send 3/4 of your full Bitcoin out. So if you want to send 3/4 of a Bitcoin, you're going to have to get that 3/4 of a Bitcoin from both of those unspent outputs. So you've got a half a Bitcoin inside the wallet on Johnson's side and then a half a Bitcoin that I sent. But in order to send that full amount, it's got to come from both places.
I see.
And the more places the Bitcoin comes from, the larger the size of the transaction data.
This is why the transaction fee on the at hope.freetalklive.com, where the address that I have there, tends to be kind of high, is I get a lot of donations. Some donations as small as $10, some $50. Just got one today.
Well, no, if you're using the same address for all this, then no, that shouldn't be creating that problem. It's when you've got the different addresses. You know how newer wallets, you create a – whenever you go to receive Bitcoin, it comes up with a new address.
Yep.
That's, as I understand it, going to cause that issue. For those of you expecting an immediate sign that SegWit is helping everything, I'm sorry to let you down, he says. In reality, it could be weeks or even months before SegWit really starts to have widespread adoption.
It's bad to get all excited about something that's going to take months to get implemented.
It could be months. And you know, that's because all these different providers, the wallet providers and the, you know, the Coinbases and all these, you know, BitPays and these people, they have to implement SegWit in their software in order for it to be even something that the users could, if they wanted to use it, could use. So we're not there yet. And the question is, how long is that going to take? And how much damage is going to be done to Bitcoin by the competition in that time frame? Because right now, you go try to send a Bitcoin transaction, your median fee at the moment is around $5. That's the median, meaning that half are more than that and half are less than that. So, you know, you go to try to send something, it costs you $5. That's going to stop a whole lot of business from happening. And it's amazing to me that Bitcoin can continue to rise in price just based on, you know, it must just be based on the network effect, on the fact that it's so old and popular and well known, and that's what people are interested in getting into as an investment. But as far as the currency aspect of it, for anything less than, you know, a $1,000 car repair at Wilder Automotive here in town, I can't see why anybody would go and, you know, spend Bitcoin on a hamburger or you know, a pack of cigarettes or a newspaper at some of the downtown businesses here in Keene that accept it. SegWit transactions can only be sent from SegWit addresses. So every single address that currently contains coins would have to send them to a SegWit address before we see the full effect of the upgrade. So hold on a second. That means that in order to, let's say, you remember earlier I was telling you about how confusing it gets with all the unspent outputs and these different addresses that are sort of hidden within your Bitcoin wallet, and that makes it so the Bitcoin transactions are more expensive when you try to send them if they're coming from the different sources?
Sure.
Well, that means that in order to send all your Bitcoins, however much you have, over to a new SegWit address, I'm guessing you're going to have to pay a fee to do that. So if you want to get your coins onto the SegWit system, you have to pay the fee in order to get there, which means if
I bet a lot of people who supported SegWit weren't aware of that.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. Probably not many of them knew the dirty details. Now, it is true that you can send a low fee. You can with the right software, like your typical blockchain software, you know, or blockchain actually will let you customize it, but most Bitcoin wallets will not let you customize the fee. Blockchain.info will. The normal sort of Bitcoin core wallet or whatever will. So if you want, you can try to send a below market fee, because what I told you before was the median fee is about $4.50 or $4.75. So if you were to send a $5 fee on a median-sized transaction, then it would get through pretty quickly. I tried sending one that was about a tenth of the regular, the median fee, and it took a full day. So if you don't mind waiting and sort of biting your nails, you know, hopefully you're not in a hurry to, you know, trade that Bitcoin or whatever.
I had a transaction take close to a week.
A week?
Recently.
Wow. SegWit2x's agreement has now been broken by one of the signatories to that agreement. Some company called Bitwala has apparently said they are not going to be forking away from the Bitcoin chain that is supported by the core development team. And what that means is when the 2x portion of the SegWit2x agreement comes into play in 3 months in November, that's when the second phase is supposed to go into play. The idea is that some of these companies that said they were going to do it are going to break ranks They're going to renege on their agreement.
One's already done it at this point.
And now one has done that.
This has been predicted by, you know, frankly, the folks over at Bitcoin.com, is that this might very well happen, in which case it's my guess that Bitcoin Cash will shoot up in value because people will see, frankly, Bitcoin, you know, SegWitCoin or whatever you want to call it, as populated by liars. And that's tough.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of these companies, they are big name companies, and if they start breaking this agreement, that is not going to be good. And the idea is that, well, some companies have already gotten their segregated witness out of this deal because it was a two-phase agreement.
Right. So that's the problem, is this is a transaction where, you know, it's like you hand over the money and then in a few weeks, please deliver my product. Yeah. Sometimes that works out really well if it's some people
you can trust. Honest. It's hard to talk about Bitcoin because Bitcoin means two things. Bitcoin means the coin itself, and it means the network that the coins are transacted on. And so it can get a little confusing trying to talk about
it. It's so confusing. It's giving me a headache. You might even say it's a splitting headache.
Yeah, it is pretty frustrating.
Oh boy,
it's pretty frustrating to try to.
I love a good pun. And
the worst part about this, though,
that would hurt me.
The worst part about, and we're gonna get to your calls here, but the worst part about all the splitting is, I mean, it's one thing for us to sit here and talk about it for an hour on the radio. We have the ability to get into, you know, an explanation of what's going on. You can't tell the average person all this. You know, there's no 30-second elevator pitch for Bitcoin anymore.
No. So here's my suggestion for anybody who's listening and cares. What needs to happen is a point of sale, whether it's online or in real life, needs to accept all coins or a large number of coins or whatever.
Just take the top ones. I don't care about all of them. Most of them don't matter.
But if they integrate Shapeshift, they'd have a huge amount of coins they could accept. And I don't know how it would go exactly. It's not my, I'm not the designer. But basically, I think that the crown needs to be ripped from Bitcoin's head. And, you know, the rest of these coins need to have their fair shot at being used as currency.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm kind of torturing myself over things because back in, I think it was like 2009 or 2010, I had on hand about 20 or 30 bitcoins. I remember I was listening to you guys and I was researching blockchain and I was like, wow, this is so exciting. And this was back in the BitInstant days.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, slowly accumulated about 30 bitcoins. I lost my first 10 because I did something funky with my password and I was kicking myself, but then I just went right back to it and accumulated another. And then I accumulated another 20. And then, of course, that's when things started falling downhill with me with the drugs and alcohol stuff, bad marriage. Long story short, I ended up, you know, gambling away part of it and frittering away the rest on the dark web. And like I say, things are going a lot better now. I mean, actually really well, but especially now that Bitcoin has been, you know, just doing crazy, crazy stuff, I can't tear myself away from the news, and it's been...
It's painful to think that you had 30 bitcoins and now you have none.
And maybe I was hoping you guys could, because I always look to you guys as probably the most positive radio show anywhere.
You've
always been the source of, well, honestly, I mean, more optimism from your show than anywhere on the radio waves. But so I'm kind of hoping for sort of at least to unload and maybe a little quick 5-minute therapy from you guys, because it's just getting ridiculous. I just can't stop. I just can't tear myself away.
So wait, you can't tear yourself away from the news about Bitcoin and the sort of feeling of regret? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Bitwala has broken their agreement. They're the first company to step out and say, nope, we're not going ahead with this SegWit2x agreement. If more companies do that, and then the SegWit2x loses its hashing power support, if there are a bunch of miners that renege on their agreement, then that could really throw everything into disarray as far as when the split happens, what's going to be the real Bitcoin after the dust settles, or how long is it going to take for the dust to settle? Because Bitcoin Cash and the original Bitcoin right now are fighting it out for hashing power.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very, very close to one another in their hashing power because the miners, they don't really care one way or the other which Bitcoin is better. They just want to know which one's the most profitable.
Right.
So there's all kinds of problems with this, and it's become such a mess. It's so hard to – I don't want to go and talk to a business owner about Bitcoin right now. That used to kind of be the thing that I would do, one of the things that I would do. And, you know, I was promoting it locally here via advertising, and it's like, it's hard for me to really get behind it at this point.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
The fees right now, where the median fee is approximately $5 to send a Bitcoin transaction. You wanted to comment?
According to who? Because I just sent $5 from my Airbits wallet to my Mycelium wallet just to test that out. Now, when that article was written, that might have been the case, and there's so many variables. How many?
No, I checked it today, dude. You go to bitcoinfees.21.co.
Yeah, but that is just a website that is conglomerating a bunch of different things. If you use a wallet that actually, accurately predicts the correct miner fees, and Ian, remember when I did that? It was a few minutes, like a half hour ago, 45 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I said it probably won't be confirmed until tomorrow. It was confirmed with three confirmations about 15 minutes ago.
Okay.
I can send you the screenshot of my mycelium.
I'm not doubting you. How many satoshis per byte did you send?
I have to look.
Because that's ultimately
mycelium,
now we're getting a little technical. That's ultimately the defining factor on whether a fee is big enough or not is the number of satoshis per byte. Now a satoshi, for listeners that are not familiar, is the eighth decimal point of a Bitcoin.
Yeah,
so,
it's a fraction of a cent. A small fraction.
Very, very small fraction, right. So
just like a hundredth of a dollar is called a penny for those who want a metaphor.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's the smallest.
The hundredth place of a dollar is called a penny. The eighth decimal point on a Bitcoin is called a Satoshi. You were wondering why Bitcoin Cash Bitcoin price is going up, or the Bitcoin Cash price is whatever it is. There is a strategy that miners have to pro Bitcoin miners mine the Bitcoin Cash chain to prevent it from doing its automatic difficulty change, which would lower the difficulty so much that it would be more profitable to mine on that Bitcoin.
Well, they have. That difficulty change has happened multiple times in the last few weeks. And I get what you're saying. That is one of the games that's sort of being played here. Your mileage may vary with these fees. I get what you're saying. I have had a low fee as well, as low as like 37 cents within the last few weeks. But the majority of the fees I've had recently have been fairly high. And it's not something that is going to be sustainable for Bitcoin to be a usable thing for the average person. And I think that's tragic. I think it's tragic. Yeah.
Now Bitcoin has changed. I agree. Back when I ran Watch My Bit, it was a currency that was nearly free to use. That's why my model worked. It doesn't work anymore.
Right. You had a business that was based on microtransactions, which Bitcoin used to be useful for and no longer is.
There's something you said years ago, Ian, that I often think about. In the last segment, you were talking to this gentleman, and you said most people just hadn't figured out Bitcoin or even gold or silver. And there's something you said back in the day along the lines of when you put a piece of silver in somebody's hands, you don't have to explain anything. They know it's worth something.
That's true. That's true.
Don't watch the video, like the man on the street videos where they go out and they say, what would you rather have?
Oh, there is that.
A chocolate bar or this 1 ounce silver coin?
Mark Dice, I think, did that. Yeah.
I got to believe that Mark Dice is editing for Nimrods.
Nope. Don't believe it at all.
Because
there's only one way to find out, and that's to try to duplicate it.
There were people out there that he was offering gold ounces to, or like a $100 bill, and people were taking the $100 bill. Mm-hmm. I can't believe that there isn't – that you're not just finding people walking down the street.
Well, you don't know who is offering this to you. I mean, how do you know offhand if it's actually silver,
How do you know offhand if it's a $100
bill? Right.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I've often thought about that too. I mean, you could get testing kits, you know, to make sure your stuff is actually legit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just stick with a vendor or a particular mining company or whatever. So it'd be Stamp Pamp or, you know, Swiss Franc or whatever. And you get into a pattern and you just spot check it every now and again.
Where does the idea of free speech end and the idea of a threat or, you know, sort of inciting a threat begin? And I'm wondering what your opinions are on that.
Good question.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, because what you'll hear people say is that there's no such thing as free speech because, and they'll have a list of reasons. One of the reasons is threats. Threats, to me, are in a different category. So if, for instance, I'm throwing a punch at your face, do you have the right or ability to touch me to block it or to, you know, to swing back?
Yes.
Well, I haven't hit you. Wait, I haven't hit you. I mean, I'm driving my car at you at 90 miles an hour in the wrong lane, but there's no victim here, mm-hmm. right? Like, so at some point, you know, at some point your actions, and speaking is an action. It's not separate from actions. It is an action. And at some point your actions are projecting violence.
As the folks over at Cointelegraph.com point out here, this company Bitwala is the one that has been the first to break the agreement. They say, quote, "We would like to honor the agreement that we subscribe to as one of the first movers, unbeknownst to the fact that most developers would not enter the agreement. We also, however, are a service company that has and will always follow what our customers use and want to use. We partially rely on third-party payment processors and exchanges to convert our cryptocurrencies and must build our products on what they support," unquote. The last comment, part of the comment comes as a surprise, given that most major exchanges and payment processors are either signatories of the agreement or have openly supported it. So
right.
That just doesn't make sense, the excuse that they gave. Bitwala's withdrawal from the New York agreement could be the beginning of its unraveling. A compromise is, by definition, an agreement with which neither side gets what they want. Since the small block camp has now seen the segregated witness activated.
That's what I found so amazing about this is, the you know, one side appeared to be willing to compromise. The other side was like, no. It's going to be our way. Well, I knew who was going to fail as soon as I heard that.
Mm-hmm.
As a soldier, the most important thing to you is that the guy next to you stands in
holds
a line.
And
I'm talking about soldiers with shields and spears, not
like 300.
Yeah, 300 kind of guys. So the guy standing next to you and the guy standing next to you are the important parts for you. However, the very best place for you to be is running the other direction.
Right.
Right. So it would be best if you could get all your friends to stand in line and for you to go the other way. Now, you know, may or may not work in this circumstance, but we'll see.
It's not just Bitcoin companies that might withdraw their support for the agreement. According to CoinDance, which is a website, coin.dance, strange web URL, but that's what it is, miners were split before the compromise, with 40% in favor of segregated witness, 40% supporting bigger blocks, and 20% undecided. It's logical to assume that some of the 40% of miners who supported segregated witness but not big blocks might decide that they don't want bigger blocks either. What does that mean? Well, either SegWit2x will not happen this November as originally planned, or it will happen, but be far more contentious than it was expected.
One of the crypto libraries behind Zcash is a crypto library called LibSodium.
Okay.
The sodium library, I guess it's built, you know, off of like some sort of a salting sort of process for, you know, cryptographic encoding. Has recently been included in the most recent version of PHP.
Okay.
And just,
which is a web programming
language. Yeah, it's a web program. It's like, it's a very widely used web programming program language. And that cryptographic library being included is kind of significant because, first of all, it just underwent an independent audit for its, you know, to find out whether or not this LibSodium was up to muster cryptographically, and they found no problems with it whatsoever.
Okay.
In this independent audit. And what I find also doubly interesting about that is that could lead to, I mean, PHP's long been kind of criticized as being kind of cryptographically and security-wise garbage.
So it's upgraded then.
So, yeah, this upgrade could significantly change things for some websites and, you know, web programming, you know, when you take into account, you know, HTML5 and this other stuff, and then PHP, and we could start to see some, you know, better security online. Steve Russell writing for Newsweek, just opportunistic, out of, you know, just crazy. These collectivist programming people are just, like, using every opportunity to show just how much they've lost their minds. And so,
wait a minute, by the way, didn't New Orleans have zoning?
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to check with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
But the zoning was 10 feet below sea level.
Well, Houston is drowning in its freedom from regulations.
Wah, wah.
By the way, I have seen of quite a few instances where city planner, the planners convention gets together, and all they do is rip on Houston the whole time.
Is that right?
They've got nothing better to do.
Wow.
This was what they were doing on NPR's First Amendment or 1A, their show that today. They were just ripping on Houston. They just hate it. They hate the idea that a city can exist without them.
Mm. We do value our freedom here in Texas. As I write from soggy central Texas, the cable news is showing people floating down Buffalo Bayou on their principles, proud residents of the largest city in the United States that did not grow in accordance with zoning ordinances. The feeling there was that persons who own real estate should be free to develop it as they wish. Houston, also known as the Bayou City, is a great location because of its access to international shipping in the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
It is not a great location for a building, though, because of all of its impervious cover. If water could easily sink into the ground, there would be less of it ripping down Houston's rivers that just a week ago were overcrowded streets.
So, Johnson, look, it's not like there's not an argument for zoning.
Right.
And the guy's making the argument for zoning.
Now, yeah, he's making the argument for zoning by saying that water doesn't run off asphalt because it collects there. It collects on the asphalt. There's nowhere for the water to go. All of Houston is a giant bowl to contain all the water. It's like a cup. It has nothing to do with the water table.
I don't know how they're...
or 30 inches of rain in 24 hours.
I don't know how their zoning laws pertain to the amount of drainage that they have to have on streets and
things like
that.
Well, if they print enough laws out, they can put a shield together of all the laws to prevent the rain.
It's a giant bubble of if they just imagine all the rain away.
All right, let me hear more.
So I got snarky in law school class heard that Houston had no zoning, wishing out loud I could build a rendering plant in the so posh River Oaks neighborhood. He says agreeing that mandatory evacuation would have driven up the casualty numbers, currently in single digits, Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo told...
That's the former Austin police chief, by the way.
Told MSNBC that half of the population would refuse to evacuate, but... enough would do so to cause massive traffic jams that would leave everyone stuck in them at extreme danger in flash floods.
Hmm.
Houston was built without regard for the
carrying. Damn if you do, damn if you don't.
Yeah. Houston was built without regard for the carrying capacity of its roads, just as it was built without regulating the amount of impervious cover that would be shedding the water into the city's streets, storm sewers, rivers, and Buffalo Bayou. Texans do value their freedom. That's it.
That's it.
All he has to
That's
say.
That's all he's got to say. So if only there weren't those people just willy-nilly developing however they wanted, then we would not be drowning.
I mean, it's just the dumbest thing.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.